So today's conversation is one that I know many, many people here and online will be watching, and we appreciate. We are here to hold the conversation. You will hear Dan say that several times over. Chicago Police Department Superintendent Larry Snelling is a 30-year veteran of the department and was born and raised in Englewood. Prior to his appointment, Snelling served as Chief of Chicago Police Department's Bureau of Counterterrorism. Please welcome Superintendent Snelling to the stage, along with Dan Gibbons, who will lead the conversation.
Cool. Thank you, Jackie. Let me turn that off. All right. Thank you, Jackie. Hello, everybody. Welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to City Club. Your first time as a featured speaker, so we appreciate you being here. As usual, City Club has a wonderful mix of diverse, incredible leaders from different sectors, and we do. They not only want to be here to hear what you have to say, but really to participate in this discussion. And all that they do and we do to better Chicago. So in that spirit, I'd like to ask our members to be ready with some questions. I have plenty of them. We've got 3 hours set for this. Right, Amanda? No? Okay, 1:15. I'll do my best. But no, thank you, Superintendent. You do have questions on your these blue pages. I've got a bunch here, but please just raise them up. We'll get them up to the front and incorporate them into the conversation as we hit on a whole host of topics. So let's get moving, and hopefully we'll get you to agree to come back another day to finish everything we weren't able to hit. How does that sound?
Absolutely.
All right. Good. Let's start now. I mean, there's so many places we could start. I always get anxious. It's Monday. I always get anxious in the summer looking at the newspaper on Monday morning. How was the weekend? You know, it's summers in Chicago that have historically been violent. This summer has been really no different, but I guess that's my question. Has it been different? Are things getting better this weekend? There is a lot happening in the city. Let's start this weekend and maybe look back over the month or in the summer and start there. How is violence in Chicago in this current state of the summer?
Things are trending in the right direction. If you look at the month of July, when we started out the month of July, that 4th of July weekend was a very, very rough time for the city of Chicago. We saw an increase in shootings. We saw an increase in homicides for that period of time. Over a 10-day span, excuse me, we saw nearly 100 people shot. The second half of the month, once we coordinated some new plans to put in place, because you have to make adjustments based on what you're seeing, we cut the number of shootings and homicides dramatically. And we ended the month well for July. Now, for the month of August, hold on. We've seen a major decrease in shootings, violent crimes overall, robberies, and homicides. Since we put our robbery team in place and our robbery strategy over a 90-day period, we've seen a turnaround of close to 500 robberies, a decrease. So where we were sitting in the red, and being in the red means that we were seeing an increase and an uptick in robberies. Now we're clearly in the green, down nearly 300 robberies so far. So we're seeing some significant changes. Our approach is more intelligence-based. We're not just throwing police at a matter without a strategy behind it. So working with our federal partners has been helpful. Our Bureau of Counterterrorism, working with patrol, having all of the bureaus working together is the most important thing right now, because prior to that, we've been siloed. Each bureau was, you know, they were doing their own things. Now all of the bureaus are working together toward the same strategy.
So if you were to point to one thing that has worked more than anything, is it that collaboration? What is it that is making things better that maybe you can focus on to further the improvement?
Collaboration and communication. So it's not just one thing, but the collaborative effort is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. If we're just putting, you know, one bureau to to work toward one particular issue that we're having in the city, then we don't have all the wheels turning on the vehicle. So when we look, just take our robbery strategy. We've got the Detective Division, the Bureau of Counterterrorism, along with patrol, working on these strategies. Obviously, we're working closely with the county. We're also working with our federal partners with the ATF. That has been really helpful with us, not only with clearing up the robbery patterns, because in the past, if we had a robbery pattern, we knew that these were the same crew of people who were committing these robberies. If you caught those people, they stayed in jail. That was the end of that pattern. What we're doing now is we're building stronger cases against these individuals when we catch them. And it's allowing us to keep them off the street for longer periods of time. And that's helping us reduce those robberies.
That's great. And I remember when you were here for a couple of programs after being named superintendent, the Attorney General, Kwame Raoul, the State's Attorney, Kim Fox, and the potential future State's Attorney were all singing your praises, and I think looking forward to that collaboration. So it seems to me that collaboration, and we've got folks here from the Mag Mile Association and businesses and others who are seeing that it's being taken more seriously when these robberies and other things are happening and they're being put behind bars, the folks that are doing this and not let out the next day. Are we going to see that trend continue?
Yes, and that's why we're building stronger cases. We want to make sure that we keep these people behind bars. Listen, let's not mince words here. Criminals are criminals, and those who go out and they have the intent on robbing. Let's not say this, and I've heard this. Well, you know, if you gave them something to do, you know, if they had jobs. That's fine for people who want jobs. And there are people who want to rob. There are people who want to carry guns. Because if you really think about it, they're stealing cars to commit these robberies. They're in possession of guns that have been altered that could cost upwards of $1,000. If you see some of the clothing that they're wearing, This is not necessarily someone who's so impoverished and so hungry that they feel that they have no other choice but to go out and commit an armed robbery. When people are hungry, oftentimes people steal food. We should not be incarcerating those people. We should be feeding them. But when you choose to take a gun, steal a car, accost an elderly woman, stick a gun to her head and force her into an ATM to withdraw her savings for your own personal benefit, that's a different type of crime. That's a different type of individual, and that's an individual that needs to be off the street.
So let's get a little further into guns, because we do here at City Club, especially this past couple of months, and now we're working with the Joyce Foundation, have a whole series of discussions about guns and about gun safety and about gun legislation and about, you know, there's so many different, that's why we had to turn it into a series, because there's so many ways you can talk about guns. How are we doing on guns? I know there's legislation outstanding, or I'm sorry, legal, you know, lawsuits and other things with some of the legislation that has been passed. How are we doing with guns? Is that getting better? And what's your what solution are you going to lean on to make that better?
Well, here's what I'll tell you. There needs to be legislation around guns, especially the way guns can be altered, where you take a simple handgun and you modify it to a fully automatic weapon, and then you can attach a drum, a 50-round drum, to this. And now these individuals are walking around with handheld machine guns. It's firepower that can take out multiple people at once. No one has a weapon like that if they don't have bad intentions. It's that simple. That weapon is designed to cause mass casualties. We definitely have to do something about that. Now, in the meantime, our gun strategy, working with our crime gun team with the CEGIC Center and the ATF. It's been just a great job running those guns through NIBIN, getting hits on those weapons, finding out murders that those weapons have been associated with or other shootings, robberies. And our partnership with the ATF has been excellent in that. And it's also helped us solve some murders and getting that information back a lot quicker to build those cases. Now, I will say this. Again, we recover over 12,000 guns every year. Every year. We make over 6,000, 7,000 gun arrests every single year. And right now, we're on pace. If we keep at the rate that we are now, we'll recover more guns this year than we did last year. Now, what that tells me is we're only scratching the surface of the number of guns that are out there. So if we're recovering 12,000-13,000 guns a year, there's no telling how many guns are out there. So we have to do a much better job of controlling the fact that our youth can easily get their hands on guns. We're seeing an increase of juveniles who are carrying guns and shooting and being shot as a result of it.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit and what we've been talking about. There's a little event coming up next week.
Just a little.
It's small. I rode Michigan. I just rode a scooter here today and rode Michigan Avenue. The city's certainly getting spruced up. It's looking good. You know that there's excitement in the air. And as we talked about, these weekends hopefully have been getting better. The world's going to be descending. I mean, 50,000 Democrats in the whole world media is going to be descending on Chicago any day now. What are we not seeing? What's going on? We've seen the flowers. We've seen the beautification, the painting. What are we not seeing? What's going on behind the scenes to prepare the city for that and to make sure certainly that our visitors are safe, but at the same time our communities are being taken care of and also safe?
Well, what we're not seeing is a whole, the training that the police department is going through, the equipment that we're providing for our officers to respond to the possibility of anything that could go wrong. We're hoping that that doesn't happen. But we're prepared for that. Just this weekend, and because we've been putting some of that training into practice, and we had two very small events just this weekend, one Bud Billiken, the other one the Air and Water Show, and they were going on simultaneously. And just this weekend and the weekends, those are our most volatile times. Now, we had some shootings. We went 3 days without a homicide. We ended up with one delayed homicide this weekend. And to say that this was a great thing, tell that to the one person or their family who lost a loved one. But those numbers have been so much greater in the past that, you know, we're not spiking the football, but we can absolutely appreciate the work that's being done to keep these things down. Now, getting through the Air and Water Show, where we probably had millions of people downtown, and the Bud Billiken parade simultaneously, and not having any major violent crime events occur at this time, tells us that where we're deploying our people has been helpful. And I don't know if anybody has noticed, you probably see more bike patrol in the field, more officers on bikes, and more foot patrol, especially in the downtown area, where our officers need to be more highly visible, tightening up those uniforms too. So we just want to make sure that there's a high visibility of our officers out there, but the training behind the scenes has been great for our officers. 2012, during the NATO event, we put our officers through extensive training. We've extended that training, and they've gotten even more training than they had during the NATO event. Now, I will say we have a very young department. So the number of people who were here during NATO is probably not as large as the number of new police officers that we have on the job. And they've been through some serious, serious training, and we're ready to go.
And if I remember correctly, you were in charge of the counterterrorism unit for a number of years. Is that right?
That's correct.
I assume that training for you has been helpful in some of this planning.
Well, in 2012, myself, Commander Cruz, who is now a commander in the academy and over the training for the DNC, we were partners. We were sergeants at the time, and we ran the training for the NATO event. We also had the first responding team in the field at 22nd Street when the clash occurred. So not only were we the trainers, but we were boots on the ground, and we practically applied everything that we trained our officers on. So all of the things that worked there, we utilized that. We worked it up. We sharpened the saw to make that better. But we also looked at things that we know that we could have done better. And we've taken corrective action with that, and this is how we're working now for the DNC. The other thing is, look, since 2012, a lot of things have changed. And you may have heard pundits or people, you know, from the past talk about these things in the media, but let's just keep in mind, sometimes when you've been removed from a place for a particular period of time, you have no idea how much has changed, not only within the department, things that have changed, you know, with laws, things that have changed with training, and then things that have just changed within the police department as a whole. 2020 changed everything. So there's a different approach. We have to make sure that our officers are well. We have to make sure that our leadership is trained, because that is the big difference here. I made sure every one of our exempt rank members has been through the exact same training. And some of it is modified because they don't necessarily have the same amount of time as the officers to go through all of the training. But they have a clear understanding of what it is those officers are learning, what they're taught, and how they're going to lead these officers through it.
So a lot of focus on the training that's different from previous conventions. I know you mentioned coordination on guns and others before, but I imagine the Secret Service, you've got all these different agencies that will be here. With all of that planning and all of that we hope goes so well, will the city function as normal? Will the city be able to function as normal? Will people be able to get around, for instance, city clubs, you know, hosting events throughout the week at a restaurant? People are still trying to understand, can I get around? Are there going to be protests everywhere? I know you don't have a magic ball, but how do you balance that great planning and the perimeters and all that with the fact that we've got the third largest city in the country still functioning and ready to welcome all these folks here?
I'd be careful using a word like normal, right? but what I will say is this. People in the city of Chicago shouldn't be afraid. You should not be afraid to go about your day and do what you normally do. Now, will there be some disruptions in traffic? Yes, absolutely. The delegates are going to be moving around. You're going to have buses. Hotels are going to be fully occupied. So you're going to see a lot more traffic. But what you're also going to see are a lot more officers. You're going to see a high visibility of officers. You're going to see bike patrol. You're going to see all of those things out there. So what I would say to everyone in the city of Chicago, plan the way that you normally plan. Just plan it a little earlier, right? Because you may run into some issues with traffic. Our plan here is to make sure that we keep this city safe. And our plan is to make sure that we keep everyone in the city safe. That's all of our residents and our visitors. We want this to be successful. And you may have heard me say this before. I've said it a million times, and I mean every word of this. If people come here to protest and they want to exercise their First Amendment rights, we welcome that. And not only do we welcome it, we will protect them while they do it. And as long as they're cooperating with us, and there's a collaborative effort where we understand each other, and you know where to draw the line. You're not breaking the law. You're not destroying our city. You're not committing acts of violence. Then this will go off well. The moment that starts, we're going to intervene. I am not going to wait until it gets out of control and then try to bring it back in. The moment it starts, you put an end to it quickly. Because a greater response now may mean that we need less of an even higher response later. So we will not allow people to come here and destroy this city. Look, every time I drive down.
We're going to make sure that that quote gets put out a little bit further after today, okay? Maybe every day.
Every time I drive down Lakeshore Drive, I look at this city. I look at the water. I look at the buildings. I look at the skyline. And sometimes I have to pinch myself, realizing and understanding that I'm in charge of, the second largest metropolitan police department in the country in the most beautiful city I've ever seen. And there's a narrative outside about Chicago. And I've heard it when I've gone to other places. Oh, Chicago, I don't want to be shot. Look, Chicago is a beautiful city. And the key here is to make sure that we keep it that way. We continue to work to bringing down crime and to continue to lift our city up so that everybody can see how beautiful it is. And we continue to grow.
Great. We're committed to helping you in that, doing our small part. And part of that question came from John Simpson. Thank you, John. We always appreciate everyone's questions. And I do have another one from City Club member Dwayne Deskins. You were talking specifically about some of the protests, and he had a specific question about, and I'll just read it word for word. As is historically the case, the vast majority of arrests that occur during a political convention are going to be state offenses. Has CPD and the Cook County Prosecutor's Office established uniform guidelines for charging decisions during the DNC?
Yes, and we're still working. We're actually still working with that state county. We're still working. And we just want to make sure that we have a clear understanding of what it is that charges are going to be. Look, we've seen certain things happen in the city. We've seen where people attempt to block traffic. We've seen people in what's called sleeping dragons. And we have a response for that. We're working closely not only with our SWAT teams, our cut teams, to remove people who are in sleeping dragons as quickly as possible. But we're also working with the fire department to do the same around our airports, all of that. I mean, I won't give away too much, but we have plans in place around all of these things. We're going to make sure that our officers are out there. We're going to have to extend hours. There are going to be day off cancellations, but there's also wellness plans in place for our officers to make sure that cognitively our officers are effective when they're responding. And they have a clear understanding of demonstrator tactics now. One of the things that I also want to be clear about is this. I want people to know the difference between protesting and rioting. There is a distinct difference. In 2020, I often hear reporters refer to that as protesting. People were murdered. There were lives lost in downtown. Officers were brutally attacked. We had some officers who had broken limbs from being attacked by crowds of people. There were vehicles burned. There were buildings and businesses looted, damaged, and destroyed. There was vandalism. That is not protesting. That is rioting. There were felonies committed at that time. So I just want to be clear. We're not going to allow that. We're not going to allow you to riot. Protesting and rioting are two different things. You have the right to protest. But there will be no rioting tolerated here.
Great. You got in, and I'm switching up a little bit. You got into the, this is somewhat related to DNC. I guess it'll be a good transition out of DNC. Is the future of ShotSpotter after the DNC, is that clear? And will ShotSpotter remain in the city?
Well, let me put it to you like this. Until the DNC is over, nothing is clear. And that's a fact. And that's more of a question for after the DNC.
When we have you back.
And when you have me back. And
And I'm trying to go a little bit easy just so we can have him back.
No,
don't scare you off.
Oh, that's fine. Throw it at me. I like a good
one. But now I got the good ones, good questions, so I don't know. So let's talk for a minute as I plow through some of these questions that just came in. We talk a lot about mental health here at City Club this last year or so. And one thing that I've noticed is in the news often is suicides on first responders, police officers for the most part. They see a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
They see things that you can never unsee. They are involved in things, or they have guns pointed at them. Officers see babies that, you know, in horrible situations. That's a lot to handle, right? How are police officers in particular, and how is the department helping with mental health and trauma and trying to help officers get through that and take care of their own mental health along the way?
I mean, that's an excellent question, and an excellent acknowledgement of what officers see on a daily basis. I mean, when you think about here, 31 years ago, I remember holding a 2-year-old child who had been shot, and to this day, I can still feel her lifeless body. These are things that you never really get out of your head. You just learn to manage those things. Some people do better than others. I grew up under circumstances where I witnessed murders when I was a young kid. Some people have never seen that before, so it's a lot harder for those particular people to process. But that being said, there are two new EAP sites that are open for officers to go in and get help. We are doing everything that we can to take that stigma off of getting treatment for mental health, that somehow you're weak or somehow it's problematic for you to reach out for help. So we want to make sure that our officers feel comfortable going to get that help. Stepping out and saying that, you know, I need to talk to someone. There has to be follow up with that to make sure that our officers are doing well, especially after witnessing a traumatic incident. Right. So we want to make sure that we follow up with those things. Also, what we've done this year, there has been a major decrease in day off cancellations for officers, because we want to make sure that our officers have their time off. Now, over the past couple of weeks, yes, we've had to cancel some days off because of the events that have occurred. And then we've got this DNC coming up. But every district has a wellness plan for our officers. So not only do they have an emergency mobilization plan if they need one, but there's also a plan to make sure that every officer is taking breaks, is hydrated, that they're nourished, because all of those things affects how an officer responds. So we're really working hard to make sure that our officers are well.
Okay, great. And how about you yourself? I mean, I've asked this question of the governor, of Mayor Johnson, of President Preckwinkle-Levern, who sat in this chair, really, as we take help. We do our part, right, at City Club to take that stigma away, too. How do you handle your own mental health? You get calls in the middle of the night every night.
Every night.
Never good, right?
I've just removed that part of my soul. I'm only kidding. No, it's a little different for me. I've always taken on challenges, and I've always kind of appreciated them. And then there are times I'm just kind of a workaholic. But I learned to manage those things, winding down with other things, you know, just reading something outside of police work every now and again. And those are the things that help keep me grounded. I just had a grandson. So
congratulations.
So thank you. You know. So I didn't think my daughter would do it. She's 34 now, so she finally decided she was going to go ahead and do it. But it's those things, family, you know, having conversations with family members. It just keeps you grounded. And the focus here and the understanding is this. It's never about me. It's about something greater. If it's about me, I worry more. I would worry more if I made it about me. If this were about my legacy, and all, I would sit and worry. I don't worry. I just prepare. And what my job is to make sure that everyone else has what they need to succeed. And because if I worry about me and how I'm going to appear, what my legacy is going to be, then my focus is narrowed. I need to broaden that focus. Because if I'm focused on success and the success of those around me and making sure that those people who are actually going to keep the city safe and make sure that we're successful, if I'm doing what I need to do for them, everything else will take care of itself. So knowing that I'm working to help everyone else be as great as they can possibly be, that's where the satisfaction comes from for me. So it's never about me. It's for the greater good. It's for everybody in this room. It's for everybody in this city. And that has to be the focus.
And with all that and the job that you do, are you able to have a little fun? This is some pretty deep topics we're getting into. Are you enjoying it?
Define fun.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you know what? Would I call what I'm doing right now fun? I would call it rewarding. I actually enjoy what I'm doing. And a lot of times people, well, you know, this was in the news and that. You know, how are you dealing with this? I like a good fight. I'm just going to be honest with you. It keeps you on your toes. And even when someone writes something that you know is not the truth, I know the truth. So it doesn't matter what someone writes. Someone writes or says something negative. I know the truth. So it's water off a duck's back. It doesn't bother me. If we allow what people say to bother us, especially when they know that this is their number one purpose, that they're writing these things to get under your skin. If I let them get under my skin, they win. They accomplish what it is they're trying to do. I don't focus on that. I just keep moving. The greatest response to any negativity is success. So as long as you focus on succeeding, you never let this drag you down. That's the focus. So I just focus on trying to succeed.
And you use a lot of we, us, not me, success. You know, I'm just hearing that. Is that helping morale in the police department? I think, and I'll just say that from my perspective of seeing various superintendents and leaders come and go, I think there was probably an intentional decision to have someone who has been in the ranks and who understands boots on the ground, and hoping that would increase morale. Is that in your view? Is that helping? Is having you as a leader helping?
Well, here's what I'll say. Because we've got a former superintendent sitting right there who came up through the ranks, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, Eddie Donaldson, former superintendent. 30-some years, right?
Yes, indeed. And things were good, were great when he sat in the seat. But people do feel a lot more comfortable with those that they feel have a better understanding of what they're dealing with and what they're going through on a daily basis. Look, Chicago is a different place, and it's probably more different, more dynamic than any other place that you will go, especially when it comes to policing, because there's so many things. It's so complicated. The city is so complicated. The gang structure out here is so complicated that working strategies up around the violence in this city is probably more complicated than any other place you'll ever go. But when I say we, I have to say we. I cannot be successful without all of the people who are working in this department. And if I made it about me, then I'm leaving out the most important thing ever. The department as a whole, and the men and women who are out there putting their lives on the line to make sure that everybody is safe. We have to be clear, and I have to make sure that I'm clear about the message that I'm sending out about our officers. If we have someone amongst our ranks who shouldn't be here, I'm going to make sure that we get rid of them. But when we have officers who are out here working and they make a mistake, but their intent was to try to do the right thing, when they're out there fighting for their lives, when they're out there fighting for the lives of other people, I am going to stand up for these officers and make sure that everybody understands that those officers are out there for you. They're human beings. And every now and again, when you're trying to do the right thing, when the energy is high, when your adrenaline is flowing, when you know, auditory exclusion kicks in, you may make a mistake because these are human beings. They worry about their lives. They worry about getting home to their families. They worry about their children's, you know, their elderly parents. And we have to make sure that we recognize this. These are not robots built on a conveyor belt. These are people. And when we put a little faith in them and let them know and understand that we care about them, they can then start to care about others a lot more. And that's the focus here, again, making sure that the men and women of this department understand that we're going to back them and we're going to take care of them when we know that they're out there trying to do the right thing and putting their lives on the line for this city.
So that all said, there is still a consent decree out there. And there's, I'll be honest, there's some, you know, it's constantly mysterious what exactly that means. It's been 5 years with you know, mandated changes that I think everyone knew would take years. But how is that coming along? It's been 5 years. How where does that stand? And what's next in conforming to this consent decree?
The consent decree is growing, but I've said this also before. I hear people oftentimes say things like, isn't this something that the consent decree is designed to prevent? You know, laws are designed to prevent people from robbing people. But people still break the law. If my focus was to just say, hey, listen, we've met operational compliance in the consent decree, it doesn't really mean anything if we haven't really changed anything within the department, if we haven't done anything that's going to be more effective for our officers and the way that our officers respond and the things that our officers are doing out there to make sure that we're rebuilding our relationship with communities and then lifting our standing in society. This is an opportunity with this consent decree to get more training, get more equipment, more resources for our officers. What's happening now with the consent decree is I haven't been here quite a year yet. Operational compliance was at 5% when I got here over the past 5 years. It's now at 10%. And people don't understand the different levels. So when we look at preliminary compliance, this means that we have to create policies. Now, it's not just us involved in that. We have the IMT, the Independent Monitoring Team, overseen by the Attorney General's Office, Kwame Raoul, who's been a great partner in this. We have attorneys. We have I can just go on and on about how many people are involved. And we go back and forth on the policy. Once we're done with the policy, then we have to train. That's our secondary compliance levels. So we're in the upper 80%, around 88% at preliminary compliance, somewhere around 45% at secondary compliance, and now closer to 10% in operational compliance, because you can only get to operational compliance when you've completed the first two. So that takes time. When you have 11,000, 12,000 members who have to be trained, it's going to take time to get that done. So we're working on it. We're moving forward with it. We will see the fruits of our labor when we're done with this.
And one of the questions I believe would fall into that category is why the delay in the deployment study that the City Council has asked for? Are there specific reasons that you can point to for that delay?
Red tape. We are doing everything we can as a department. Now, this workforce allocation study has been promised for years, and nothing happened. I've been here for less than a year. We worked on it. We have people who are funding, but there has to be agreements as to exactly what it is that workforce allocation study looks like. We're very close. We are. We're very close. And we will get it done, and it should be done shortly. But we don't want anybody to think that this is not being done or the Chicago Police Department is dragging their feet. There are other players that are a part of this. So it's not just the police department alone. There are other factors in here that have to be worked out in order to get it done. And it will be done. We will get this done soon.
Okay. Two of these, as you're talking about making reforms in the department, two questions, one from Denise at the Magnificent Mile Association, one from Gus at Verizon, both talking about technology. Obviously, there's lots of advancements every day. What are some of the most successful technologies that you're seeing where you're implementing to help support the shortage of officers, stem the crime, and deployment? Tell us a little bit about technology and what technology you're using.
So our ATC rooms and our SDSC rooms, this is where our officers are working with our officers in the field. It's helping us out with CTA, with transit. It's helping us out with the detective division. Because our area technology teams, I mean, it's amazing the work that they're doing right now with locating footage of violent offenders committing acts or just following someone from a location, being able to follow that path. And that's helped us solve multiple violent crimes, armed robbery, shootings, and homicides. So that is a very effective way to fight crime. Again, working with the ATF, pushing guns through NIBIN has also helped us a lot. Having the ATF help us with that, working directly with the state's attorney's office, all of those things have been great. I mean, I could go on and on about what we're doing, but technology has been great for us. And again, you know, we've had technology that has helped us get to jobs quicker. We're still utilizing it right now. And when our officers have arrived on scene, we've apprehended people. But bigger than that, our officers have arrived on scene and saved lives, applied tourniquets, chest seals, quick clots, stopping people from bleeding out. It's been great to see our officers respond in that way.
Our own Dr. Ed Mazur has a question here. There have been numerous break-ins, burglaries on Michigan Avenue, Oak Street, and the south side of high-end stores. News media have pictures of the break-ins and the cars used. But are these folks ever arrested and prosecuted?
Yes, we have apprehended numerous people who have done this, and we've seen at times that some people who have committed these crimes were out on electronic monitor. So we do know that we have repeat offenders who are committing these crimes. Now, that doesn't mean that we've caught everyone, but we're also working on a burglary strategy. And we're studying the times that these burglaries are occurring. But we also know that criminals have become very brazen with the way that they commit crimes. They'll do it right out in the wide open. There are some people who feel that they're immune from being arrested or prosecuted. So we have to change that narrative. So we're working to make sure, and we'll I actually just met with a bunch of business owners, restaurant owners, about how we're going to collaborate and work together moving forward to fight these burglaries and the loss of business.
Okay. Thank you for that. I have one from Jose. Didn't put his last name down, but I'll ask it anyway, from the Policing Project. We've heard you say that every officer should be a community policing officer. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate on what that means and how you actually operationalize that?
Community policing has been siloed from district to district, and we have officers who are committed to being community police officers. And I often wondered, does that send a message to our other officers that they don't have to engage the same way our community policing officers are engaging? So if we say that we want officers to engage with our communities in a respectful manner or in a collaborative manner, why shouldn't that be all of our police officers, not just a group of officers who are assigned to do that? All of our officers should be doing the same thing. We should be communicating with everyone in this room. We should be having conversations with people along that Mag Mile in our neighborhoods and in some of our most volatile neighborhoods. We should be having these conversations, because if we're having these conversations with people, we're gathering information that's going to help us be a more effective police department. The only way that we are going to rebuild our relationship with the community and gain that trust that we're looking for is for our officers to have to form a collaborative effort around problems that everyone is facing in their everyday lives, and that we can provide some type of confidence to these people that we're going to show up, that we're going to help them, or that we hear what they're saying and we're going to do something about it. So that's the focus on having every police officer become a community police officer. I want them community minded, and I want them to think about this. We're all in this together. Everyone here lives in this city. And when you look at your own family, do you want them to be protected? That's what everybody else in this city wants. And I want every officer to respond that way.
And I understand certainly you know, CPD, the department, you can't do it all. And what we're trying to do here at City Club is elevate the conversation a bit and focus on leaders, community groups, you know, things that are going well, things that are happening in the community, and try to lift up what they're doing. What are you seeing out in communities that is working? And maybe we should focus on here. What are other leaders, other community groups, maybe it's violence prevention or intervention, you know, crime, I'm sorry, the mothers groups, there's so many different things that are happening. What are you seeing that's working that maybe we should try to push a little bit further?
Well, there are quite a few things. Our detective division is doing a great job with increasing the family liaison program, because we're looking at people whose family members, they've lost family members to violence. And that family liaison program, reaching out to those families, talking to them, having conversations, letting them know, you know, that we're still working on their cases. People just want to know that we're still helping them out. We're still working. We're still focused on bringing them some level of justice. Right. Can't bring back a life. But if we can bring them some type of closure, it makes them feel a lot better about it. That's one thing. The other thing is victim services. That's been a helpful tool. Obviously, we're continuing to build on that. We need to hire more people to make sure that we can provide for the entire city. But collaborative work. I've recently been working with Deputy Mayor Gary in Gatewood and the mayor's office when it comes to collaborating with more groups. Look, for a long time, Chicago Police Department, I'm not speaking ill of the fire department.
You're not allowed to do that here at City Club,
no,
by the way.
No. But the fire department's been great partners, and they're out there 24 hours a day. But Chicago Police Department, we're out there 24/7. We're not 9-to-5. My job is not 9-to-5. I get calls all day, every day, all through the night. As a matter of fact, I think I got about 4 calls from about 1 a.m. until about 4 a.m. But we can't do it alone. We need everybody involved. Because, look, when it comes to the police department, we have to police constitutionally. And if there's a large gathering and the police department goes in and we break up the large gathering because we have an understanding that there's a possibility that this could end in a shooting and people hurt, no one gets shot, no one gets hurt, then the narrative is, oh, the Chicago Police Department overstepped and they violated everyone's constitutional rights. Because you can't measure it because it didn't happen. But then the police department does not go into that large gathering and they don't break it up and people get shot. Now the Chicago Police Department didn't do anything and they just allowed people to be shot. What I would like to see is more education for people before people decide to write stories, before they decide to jump on a wagon and push a particular narrative. Get the whole picture. Understand what it is that we're dealing with on a daily basis. You know, and everything that we're trying to balance, everything that we're trying to fight through, because it police work is way more nuanced than people believe. So we don't have a magic wand. We can't just go out there, wave a magic wand, and stop everyone from shooting and killing each other. We can't go into people's homes. This is why, as a police department, a lot of times that we have to react or respond to things because there's a thing called the Constitution. We need other people to step in when we know that they're troubled homes, they're teenagers or young children who don't have the resources. We need people to step up and provide those things because on one sense, as a police department, we can do something about it right now. We can do something about it for the future. But what do we do as an entire society to stop young people from continuing to go into that cycle of violence? So it cannot just be the police department. We can't lock everybody up. We can't try to solve this by putting everyone in prison. We have to have other people stepping up and not just criticizing how the Chicago Police Department works around these things. There's a lot of work that we're doing. We have to be very careful about how we do it. We have officers who are making decisions out there about their lives and the lives of other people. And unless you've been in that situation where you now have to make a split second decision about saving your life or the life of someone else, it's easy to sit back from behind your desk and judge that situation and how that officer should have responded. But unless you know what that feels like, you know, listen, someone could say to me right now, childbirth is tough. I can say it's tough, but I can never really tell you how tough that is because I can never, I have never, and I will never experience that. So I think it would be a smart thing for me to do is to shut up when it comes to talking about what it feels like to give birth. Now, I'm not saying people should shut up. What I'm saying is have the information. Understand what that incident was. Understand what someone is going through at that moment. These decisions are very tough to make. And when you're a human being and you've been trained to see certain things and you've seen them over and over again, and at that very moment, this is what you believe was going to happen. Everything that an officer does should be judged based on a totality of circumstances and the fact that an officer has to make a split second decision. So it's very important that we educate people and people are willing to be educated on what it is and what our responses are and how we're trained to respond. So three components. I just want everybody to understand the law, department policy, and training. Those three things are how we should be judged and how and when people should make decisions. If we don't have the education on any of those things, we should be educated before we make any statements.
Thank you. thank you for educating us today a bit. There's a whole lot we didn't get to, and I apologize for those great questions that we will hope to have you back. We're going to give you a break for a couple weeks. I know you have a few things going on, but I'll be in touch and hope to have you back soon. Thank you for all of your efforts. Good luck this next week. It's going to be a pretty intense week, but we're very excited about showing off Chicago and putting our best foot forward and have a lot of faith in everything you're doing. So thank you for that. Thank you for being here at City Club. Thank you all for joining us. Yes. We as City Club will be very busy next week. Keep an eye on our website. We have City Club Hub. We'll be taking over the Chicago Firehouse restaurant in the South Loop and having people like Superintendent Snelling from not only Chicago, but around the country and around the world, in fact, coming and going at City Club in between meetings and for radio interviews and whatnot, and hope to have various members there for that as well. So thank you for allowing us to do that while the city is being safe and taking care of all our visitors. Thanks for your time here today, and everybody have a great rest of your week.
Thanks. Yes, thank you. Thank you, everybody.